affiliates to call in and give messages, people could call in. They don't have to be on video mm-hmm. for public comment. If it were too, I haven't quite asked Charlie if it's possible to do that many more people. You know what it's like to have that many more people on the conference call. It wasn't difficult with seven people. It really wasn't, and we'll be trying it because we're going to be doing video interviews of candidates very mm-hmm. soon. Another issue is, you know, we'd have to have our packets all sent out in advance so we could all have our packets in front of us. And, you know, as certain documents come up at the last minute, I mean, there would have to be a way that they could be, I don't know how I would, like, be, see, I'm not really comfortable with split screens and such, but, we would obviously be talking to people and looking at documents at the same time, so it'd be nice if we had the documents in paper form to go through them rather than on the screen. But anyway, there might be ways to deal with that. So I'm sorry Tracy isn't on the line to be able to talk about whether we could take it to the next step and do that for like 25 people rather than seven.
One of the things that I've been trying to pursue, and I haven't been very successful at it, but it's probably me, it's my weakness. I'm sure that I don't quite know how to contact with these people, but the Regal Cinemas have access to their to screenings for things like this, and I as soon as I get some figures, in fact, some figures that I can send to you guys, I'm going to send them out to you. But that is the same thing that Teresa's talking about, but I think on a larger scale. You know, like we might get in a production room someplace. Like Washington has a production room just down the hall and around the corner from the studio that belongs to that media, the people that they sublease from. You could put the four people from New York in there and make them promise not to fight with each other and then have a place on the side where a microphone and stuff is set up where a person could come in and give their public comment and stuff like that, and then link that with all five areas. And that doesn't seem to me to be terribly rocket science, but it may be expensive. But it can be as expensive as sending us all something.
Richard, I was on the stack here, so I'm going to jump in here for a moment.
And okay, Teresa after her.
Yeah. You know, I was a little bit worried before because I know people had gone to a lot of effort to look at the video streaming and so forth, and I thought, oh my goodness, I hope this is not in vain. The question is whether or not this substitutes for an in-person meeting. That's the question that we're facing here, I think. However, I think the other thing that we need to have some clarity on is, and I appreciate Margie mentioning this, is that one of the reasons why we want to go to these various Pacifica stations around the country is to have the public comment from those particular station areas. But I think the other reason is because of the length of concentrated time the board would be spending on Pacifica issues, right? I mean, when we're on a conference call in one of our meetings, it's, what, 3 hours, whereas when we have in-person meetings, it's like 3 days often, right? A huge amount of time. So, I think that in the discussion we've had about these video conferencing meetings, we've talked about also having like a few days of video conferencing. Is that correct? That's what we've been talking about. So, but the reason I'm bringing this up is that I think overall we need to have a better concept of why we have these in-person meetings with Pacifica stations in the first place. And so the two reasons that I can think of is, one, to hear the public comment from that area, and secondly, an extended period of time to work on Pacifica issues. Is there any other reason why we need to do that that you all could think of? I'm just curious.
Well, one thing that was brought up to me was, you know, if we're going to be interviewing candidates, it's good to have them face-to-face to interview them.
Oh, yeah, and reviewing budgets, that's real tough.
The reviewing the budgets is major, is it not? Yeah. For some reason, people seem to think if you're going to be reviewing budgets, you need to it needs to be in person, right, Richard?
Yeah.
That's the assumption. Why is that?
I don't know.
Well,
I think I can respond to that.
All those little numbers. Okay, who is that, Teresa? Yeah.
This is Teresa. I think it's because we've given people deadlines that they have not met, and we're saying, if you don't meet this deadline, we'll do it for you. And I think that they have found that it is easier for the 20-some members of the PNB to work on a budget when they're all in the same room. I mean, it's complicated, you know, spreadsheets, and I think that it's really intense working through problems, and sometimes I guess you lose that on the phone, where people, when you don't have the eye contact, you don't have the body language, it's hard to call on people, and I don't know, that's...
Yeah, I lost eye contact on that. anybody else?
This is Heather. This is Heather, Richard. I just want to say that I appreciate Margie offering to do some more investigation on this. So that'd be great. I look forward to hearing what you come up with.
Yeah, very much.
Thank you, Margie. Thank you.
No problem.
And I think we're, others of us, we're not speaking a lot tonight. I don't know, but... others of us are looking, and like I said, as soon as I can get something on Regal Cinema back from them, and I can send it to you guys, and I was hoping for that today, but it just didn't work out. But I guess we just need to all keep looking into this. We're kind of running late tonight, I think, because we were going to try to get wrapped up by 10 o'clock, I believe I heard. And it's just now 10 o'clock on the East Coast. Do y'all have anything pressing that we need to talk about the rest of the evening, or can we go on and just keep researching this?
Okay, I just have one other topic, and I didn't put this on the agenda, but I just want to get everyone's take on this, if you don't mind, Richard. It has to do with the time that people can talk at meetings. As a timekeeper, I think we had some discussion, and maybe, Brenda, you have some minutes on this, but I was trying to decide exactly what we decided. When somebody is motivating a motion, we give them, I think, generally 2 minutes to talk. And when people are responding to the motion, we're giving them 90 seconds. I think at one point we had some 60 seconds in there. I've found people can't, 60 seconds is too short. So does that make sense to everyone? It's 2 minutes when people are motivating and 90 seconds when responding or making some comments about the motion. Does that make sense? Is everybody comfortable with that?
That's fine. This is Margie. I just think that we have the one caveat I would put out there is that we have to get we have to make sure that the chair is clear, not, you know, to admonish someone not to speak on their motion before they've made it. So you make the motion. This is how it's always worked in organizations. So if somebody says, I want to make a motion, you say, okay, state your motion, then you may motivate it, and then you move in, and then the chair ascertains whether there's a second, and then you move into the discussion.
Good point.
And
right.
We have to be kind of rigorous about that, because what tends to happen is we're a little sloppy and people start talking about how they feel, and then they make a motion, and it's like, wait a minute, you know, and then when does the motivation start, and how much time does this person really get to talk, you know, like that.
I completely agree. And what I'd like to be able to do, actually, is to send an email out to the board about about these time considerations.
Yeah, how you do this. Okay.
And how you do this, right?
Yeah.
So I would like to do that prior to the meeting, even this Thursday. Because if I'm the timekeeper, or you're the timekeeper, Margie, whoever is the timekeeper, I always feel that that it's sort of like an effusive kind of thing, that there's not really a clear understanding of this. And I'm saying, okay, your time is up, but I want some clarity here.
I think that 2 minutes that you're talking about to set your motion, and then the 90-second thing, I think that came out of the committee maybe a long time ago. Maybe Margie, did you first mention that a few months ago or something? I think that that's a policy we set.
I do want to mention, however, that when there's when you have a report from a committee and they're presenting something to the board, this takes longer than 2 minutes.
Yeah, that's right.
So you've got to have, there's got to be a little bit of flexibility here. So on the whole, though, from most committees, I'm finding that when people are presenting whatever it is they want to present to the board from their committee, it can usually take about 2 minutes,
mm-hmm.
about that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you all have any additional comments about this timing as you think about it, please let me know. I'd really like to know your thoughts on it. But so in the meantime, however, I intend, Richard, on sending out a notice to the board with this time consideration so people know, okay?
Good.
This is Summer.
Okay.
All right.
Just a second. I would just like to tell Heather that your 90 seconds is up. Summer, it's your turn.
Thank you.
I guess I'd like to ask Heather, as timekeeper, if you could be a bit more aggressive on the agenda end of when we run out of time for setting agenda. I think if the board were forced to extend time every time, mm-hmm. sometimes we kind of just float in the agenda approval space, and I'd like you to call time vigorously every time we run out of time in the agenda approval process as well. And maybe
Absolutely.
Like, if we've got 5 minutes, and then, you know, probably a first round, you know, ask to extend time will pass. But maybe if we're on our third round of saying, do you want to extend time and approval of the agenda, everybody will get sick of it and say, no, let's just get to work, okay?
I hate to be a party pooper, but you can't set time. Now, we could set this thing about the 2 minutes and the 90-second thing, but we can't. The agenda doesn't have a time
frame. Oh, God.
That's an issue, Summer. There's not a time factor there. Can we do that?
Yes.
Well, we could set a standing rule if we all agreed to it. We could vote on having a standing rule that we have 10 minutes for agenda setting, and anything beyond that requires a vote. I don't know. I would maybe suggest that. I mean, the body can approve things for its own efficiency. So if the group says we choose to set a standing rule that there will be 10 minutes provided for agenda setting and approval, and anything beyond that will require a vote, that would create a time space for us. So perhaps that's my suggestion then.
We can do that.
Okay. Thank you. So maybe we'll, I wouldn't mind bringing that to a vote on Thursday, that we set a standing rule for agenda approval time period, okay? Because, I mean, it is, in my opinion, the place where we just suck up the most time in the most meaningless fashion. Nobody's even arguing. I mean, you're right. Margie was right about her point. People try to argue their points when they aren't even necessarily have a motion on the floor yet. But other than that, I just think that's a place where I just see a huge loss of time for the group, you know?
Yes, this is Heather, and I must say that as if I'm the timekeeper, it's exceptionally frustrating because there is no time there for the agenda. So I'm just waiting, biding my time until we get to the agenda, right? Until we get to the items on the agenda to be timing people. So, all right, I don't want to belabor the point.
If we did a standing rule, would Heather, would you bring that rule as a motion?
Yeah, sure.
And just say, whatever it is you're going to say.
Okay. Yeah.
But it don't take too much time.
ten minutes is completely unreal. Serene for the staff.
Okay, Serene.
And then Teresa. I think I heard Teresa first.
No.
Thank you, Serene. Thank you, Serene. I think that sometime in the very near future, we should encourage people, if they can, to do one of our telephone conferences in video, and just for fun. And I'm sorry, are we specifically on, are we just talking about in general things, talking about how the meeting's conducted, or do you only want me to speak to the issue of timing right now?
Who is this, Teresa?
Yes.
You know, that was the last. That was the last thing we were touching on before we adjourned.
Okay. Here is my other item. Robert, I was driving home from the station, so Robert was listening in on my conversation, and he said something about reports. And I agree. The value to many of these reports is so we can compare with what was before. You know, how are we this month compared to last month? Some of the statistics we see in
hello.
You're breaking up, Teresa.
We lost her.
She may be driving.
Well, you're in a bad patch.
Okay, so Heather's gonna bring a motion at the very beginning of business.
Yes, I'll do that. Right, I will.
Hello? I was next after Teresa.
Okay. Shireen, you want to go on with yours, and maybe Teresa will come back in.
Right. So I specifically did not bring a motion with regard to the issue of how we can make our meetings more effective.
Right.
So I'm surprised that although we had agreed to have a discussion and not bring motions, that we're now ending up with a motion. Did I misunderstand our original agreement to just have a discussion and not bring anything in the form of a motion?
I didn't know that we had banned the motions, but the main thing that Heather was the one that I think that was talking about maybe figuring some way to expedite the meeting and to have some kind of set time on agenda approval. We would have to have a standing rule, and I think that the understanding there was no real motion, was that Heather would bring a motion and try to set a time for the agenda approval that we would have to appeal each time to spend more time on.
I certainly didn't say there was a ban on motions, Richard. I'm sure that was meant as a joke, so I'll just chuckle along.
Did you have a motion you wanted to?
Well, I very well would have introduced a motion before, except I thought we had agreed that this was going to be an informal discussion of the issue. So, yeah, if I can be given a moment, I'll...
I was headed towards the door, I had hoped, but...
But I'm saying something like a 10-minute agenda setting is in my view, so...
10-minute on what?
I said the suggestion I thought I heard was 10 minutes for agenda setting, and that is so unrealistic as well as really intended to... Well, I shouldn't say intended. It will effectively squash, you know, any real discussion. So I don't think that's useful, and I wish we had. I don't think that's a constructive approach. I mean, it may do what some people want it to do, but I don't think it's
useful for the group.
Richard, this is Heather. Can I respond to that?
Sure.
Listen, one of the things about having, say, the 10 minutes is that there just would be a standing rule that if we want to continue having a more discussion about the agenda, that we will ask for an extension of time. It's just having some kind of infrastructure. It's not preventing the board from having more time. It's just having a system for having more time if it's needed.
I'm saying it takes...
Have some limitations. Pardon me?
It does not... A 22-person body simply cannot set an agenda within 10 minutes, especially with the way the agendas are prepared. So I had begun the discussion about opening up the process of creating our agendas to begin with, which I think is the most inclusive and useful way to address the amount of time spent on it. So here now that we're going to set a 10-minute limit on setting agendas, after which you then have to get a majority in order to extend, you know, what is that? That shuts down discussion. That shouldn't be the way we function.
Yeah. This is Rich. I want to ask for a place on the stack, too. I can see what Serena's saying. If there's a majority that wants to keep something from even being considered to be on the agenda, you can shut down that agenda approval thing and shut people out. So I can see where us putting time on. And that might be the reason time is, you know, I think it was Brian that brought that up and pointed out to us that there was no time on agenda approval. And that might be why, if that's a Roberts rule or whatever, I don't know what that is, but that might be why it exists, so that people have time to fill that agenda the way they want to. It's just something we have to deal with, the time we spend on that. What do y'all think?
So does this require doing some research to look at Robert's Rules' position on time for agenda setting?
Hello, Teresa here.
It might. Who is that, Teresa?
Good night. Awesome. Yes, I wanted to finish my thought, but if everybody's off the phone, I guess I can't.
we're still here. We're all here, Teresa.
I want to say
Just a second, Teresa. Let me give you a little brief up. We were talking about, I was asking if we're ready to adjourn, and we got to talking about the time stuff around the agenda, and we said if we want to limit it, maybe we can set it to time, maybe 10 minutes to go through, and then if we needed more time, get that extended, and maybe that'd be a way to, and then it was pointed out that maybe that would be too limiting to people. And some of us agreed with that. You know, that if you were locked into something very strict, it might limit even more the amount of input different folks could have. So we're still deciding. Okay.
Well, let me weigh in on that. I think there are some people that want to bring things that they're small group of people or large group of people. It's on the agenda further down, and they want to bring it up. And there's always a struggle over that.
Well, they have
and
a right to
also,
do it.
There are also other people that they have items that have not gone through a committee, and they want to put it on the agenda. Maybe it's like an emergency, or they figure it's essential to get it on. That's usually what ties up our agendas. I mean, that's really what we're people saying, this is so crucial, I got to move it up, and some people don't want it to. I mean, I guess if people could just put aside their personal allies, and they figure, well, I maybe need to support him or her because of this, and think about the whole group, maybe some of those things are not so essential. But if you've got one person that, or maybe two or three people that want something move up on the agenda, and it's clear that the whole group doesn't, you know, we're having to fight over things like that, and it's taking up a lot of our time.
I don't know, sort of looking past Robert's rules, how you can avoid that, but, you know, people have the right to do that.
Well, they do have the right to do that. I think the only thing we can expect is that they be gracious and not tie the group up if they realize that they're not going to have their way.
This is Heather. Richard, I just want to make a comment about this because I'm the one who's to present some kind of standing rule. What I'd really like to be able to do is a little bit of legwork and some research on the position that Roberts takes about this before I come up with something this Thursday. And I'll get something out to the coordinating committee on what I find.
And we may have loosened the dirt under your standing rule. It may not be as firm as it was 10 minutes ago. I'm having second thoughts myself. I don't know.
Yeah, so...
Thanks for asking the question. I wanted to thank Serene
for asking the question, and so we'll just do a little bit of legwork on this first. I will send something out to the board, however, about the 2-minute and 90-second criteria.
That's good.
And I wanted to bring my other item up after the queue, if the queue is ended now.
A new item?
I wanted to say something about reports. Can I just get in my thought about the report?
You can do that, but we need to adjourn when you get through. Okay, go.
My thought is this, and this is what Robert said. And he said, my thought first is, reports are particularly important when they have statistics that show whether you're making progress or not. And his thought was, especially about the CFO, he said, you know, CFO reports need to reflect items of financial significance that are given to him. And he said, in some instances, he's not getting the reports from the station. So until he can figure out the policy about what's going to happen if he doesn't get the report and when he gets the report and how to enforce that or take charge of it so he gets that information, then his reports will not be timely and will not be meaningful. So we need to help him get what he needs. Do we have the policies in place and the way to enforce them so that he gets the information that he needs to present us with the report?
Probably not in all cases. And I would hope that, Rob, if you're still there, if you come across situations like that, maybe we can help you.
Well, I'll talk to Robert about policy. I don't know what policies we have, but we need to think about, do we have the policies in place that force the general managers to... And all the unit managers to give the information to the CFO that they need. Because we have people that we have business managers that say, well, we don't understand how to do that. Still.
Yeah. Hmm.
Can I say something?
I would bet we're not that organized. Margie, is that you?
No, that was Raul was asking.
Yes.
Raul, I'm sorry. Raul, did you have something to comment?
Yeah. I'm currently working on the completing the current year financial statements, and I have developed a checklist of the reports and the procedures that needed to be done each month so that we can compile all the financial information here at the national office. And that is like, I'm working with three or four of the existing business managers in place at our units, and unfortunately we don't have WBAI and WPFW, but we're working on that ourselves. But in the meantime, I have developed a group of reports as well as the requirements of the month-end closing, a checklist. so that each individual business manager, as well as with the responsibility, as well with the general manager, will provide that information at a certain date. I'm very lenient with the deadlines in the sense that it's a new procedure. As we are in this meeting, I'm developing some of the written procedure so that it will be implemented across the board. But I can definitely have the monthly checklist reports that we needed here at the very minimum to create an accurate and timely financial statement. And I can share that with you know, whoever, maybe the finance committee. And also, on top of that, I'm developing some new reports. I have sent out a couple of the radio stations already. I'm reviewing the financial statements through July 2013 with a monthly breakdown of the P&L so that everybody can at least utilize it for their budget review. Unfortunately, it's coming a little bit later because of our priorities previously. But we're developing this report, and I'm coordinating with the managers of the first two bigger stations, the West Coast stations, KPFA and KPFK, so that it will assist them in analyzing the their budgets. So we're ongoing with that now that we're just waiting for some other loose ends on the audit. The audit is primarily complete from our end. We're just waiting for some of the legal confirmations from the lawyers, but my side of the audit are pretty much done. So I jump right away to developing this financial statement as I have committed to the Finance Committee as well as PNB that I will deliver these financial reports by the end of this month.
You know, those first procedures that you're talking about, well, if you would keep those in a file somewhere that we could maybe bring together in a booklet or something so that people see what you're doing. And,
sure.
And there can be some... next year we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We do the same things, maybe update the forms or whatever there.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Because we don't have a lot, as y'all know, because you had to apparently go back in the national office and recreate a bunch of stuff. Hopefully we can have more of that stuff in a file form that we don't have to recreate each time.
Yeah, I created a directory here for all the procedures that we are going to utilize and implement across the board. And there was a report of the consultants that we hired a few months ago, like in early this year. And I'm kind of adding on to it and kind of making some corrections and revisions on those. There's kind of a base report that I'm working with, and I'm just adding on to that. And then I am also developing on the side what some of the procedures needed to be done at the local level so that they can do their own accounting at their level, at their own station. So we have definitely...
I want to make one other statement. To Raul before we end the meeting, if possible.
Who is that?
Teresa.
Okay. Just a second. Okay. And Raul, were you through or are you?
I am through.
Thank you for that. That's I look forward to looking at some of that myself. Okay, Teresa, what you got?
This is one other thing about reports, and I think it will. I think it affects all stations. First of all, you'll notice that Robert Mark, who's on the audit committee and is our chair, he's very, very shrewd, very smart attorney, and he's worked for nonprofits. And he saw something on the audit report that he sent you an email about it, wants to talk to you about it. But there's something else that he mentioned that I think that we need to discuss with you. When CPB found a problem with the way we were reporting our premiums, and said that you know that it would affect the money that we gave them because we were not that we were improperly reporting our premiums, and this made a significant difference in the amount of money that some of our stations are getting from CPB. I think that you need to talk to Robert about that. I don't think we had anyone to defend our position when CPB came out with this, and I think that that we've been wronged.
Yes.
And I don't know who's going to bring that up with him, but we got very bad press. It was very costly. It affected so many different things, and he has been able to articulate the question, and I don't know whether anybody's doing anything about that.
There is actually, yes, this is Raul. Can I answer?
No, I was just giving you a call.
Yes, thank you. There is actually, a gap regulations to how do you record the listener support and the donation that's coming from the public. And part of the legal or the generally accepted accounting principle as well as a legal requisition or requirement from the CPB is to offset some of the premiums that we have incurred against the listener support revenue, which is the basis for the funding or the grant funding from the CPB. So that is one of the issues that were raised by the audit, the CPB audit. Secondly, the audit that was done, one of the adjustments was that some of the tickets or premiums that were given away were not valued at fair market value of those. And those are one of the issues that I kind of disagree with. If I was here, I would have probably talk to the CBB and explain that. And I have, after I saw what the audit was about and I've heard what I didn't see the details, but after I heard that, I consulted with our current auditors and I said, if tickets were given away to us and we did not report the fair market value of that, the $50, we were penalized for that. We should have. They were asking us to reduce our listener support money by, let's say, $50 worth of tickets. So they're saying that $50 should be reduced. However, what the CPB neglected to do is that recognize that $50 as income to us, as donation to us as well. So it's just a wash, and we should not be penalized for that. So. That's one thing that somebody should have defended that during the audit. But I don't know the previous CFO or the.
Well, I don't think we had a CFO when that came down.
Oh,
maybe
okay.
You could go back and ask them.
Yes,
about
we did.
There was a CFO when all that happened.
But yeah. I'm sorry. A point of something.
Okay, yeah. Who is that?
This is Serene.
Okay, Serene.
I'm not sure where, I mean, this is an important discussion to have. I just don't know where on the agenda it is. And, but having said that, I would like to say something on the subject and then I'd like to sign off. You guys can stay on. It's 10:30 here. I'm ready to go.
I would ask that, if you make a motion to adjourn after you get to making your comment.
Okay. So I wanted to say that the assessment that the charge has been made and perhaps has not been responded to, but the assessment of a penalty has not yet been made, has it?
I don't know if that was part of the assessment already. I did not see the details of the audit. I just saw the write-up of the final determination of what was being assessed to us.
Okay, so I would suggest
answer that
in your free time that you know, and again, we're not getting another disbursement until next year. So there's, as I understand it, or so there's some time anyway. Even if it's later this year, there's still some time. It can still be challenged, and even if the decision is not reversed, the response that you just made would, you know, or whatever we come up with, would still be on the record, and it's important to establish a record on something. So you know, there's still, if it wasn't dealt with, you know, probably at the time, it can perhaps still be corrected, if not cured.
I'm sorry, can I be on the stack, Richard, please?
Good point. Did somebody else?
Yeah, it's Summer.
Okay, Summer, you want to comment? We got to go when we get
there. Yeah, it's a completely done deal. All the assessments have been made. The penalties are in the audit report. They're dinging us on the next disbursement next year. It's done. The previous administration responded to it. The previous ED and CFO, they've made their rulings. They're taking a big chunk of money out of all five stations, so the three bigger stations are getting hit harder. I don't have the numbers right in my head, but I want to say it's around $40,000 for BAI and a similar amount for K and A. Those are the three stations that got hit the hardest. They've made a determination. They've given us their findings. They've told us what we have to do not to be in complete trouble going forward. I don't think there's any room here for the new CFO to do anything because
there's
they've made the decision already, and that was all based on the responses that were provided by my predecessors.
And right. we passed a motion to supposedly correct it too, didn't we, as a board?
Yes. That's in terms of correcting the Communications Act compliance and the discrete accounting, the various things that they wanted corrected out of that. But they've already made a determination that listener support was overstated for those years that they audited, and they're going that out of coming assessment.
The question, though, is whether or not that determination can be appealed. And even if it cannot be appealed for purposes of reversal, can it be corrected on the record? I mean, there's...
In what way?
Well, if I understood what the CFO just said, he said that, in fact, we had not misstated or overstated, that it may not have been properly stated, but it may not have been overstated.
Well, I think the fact that we brought it up and it's on everybody's mind, it's on Raul's mind, it's on Summer's mind, if that comes by, I jump on it, folks. I would hope that we're going to adjourn and go away and think about these lovely thoughts. And
we're going to adjourn and go to bed.
I move that we adjourn.
Okay. Teresa moved we adjourn. All in favor? Let's go.
No opposition.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, all.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you, Raul. Thank you, Summer.
Good night.